Good morning, everyone. Hello, Randy.
I was just excited to say good morning, everybody.
You were.
I didn't want to wait.
We are here with Plant-Based OKC, as normal, on this fourth Tuesday of the month. I'm Andrea Conway, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Jimmy Conway.
Hello, everyone.
And Randy, that you've already met.
That's exactly right. And I just want to tell our listening audience something, that you two look splendid today.
Well, thank you, Randy.
Much better than normal.
Well, that is something to say.
And it's got to be the plants.
It is. Yeah.
It's the plants. The plants are the plan.
That's exactly right.
Well, here we are on this Tuesday before Thanksgiving. So I want to say happy Thanksgiving to all our listeners out there. And that's going to kind of be the topic of our conversation today. Because, as you know, we talk about food and what foods we eat and don't eat and what foods are for optimal health and
the fantastic facts of fabulous food.
That's exactly what we talk about. So I kind of want to start a little differently, though, this morning. And I want to talk about what Thanksgiving was for us when we grew up and what we ate. Because so many times when we go around talking about how we eat and what we promote, people think, you know, somehow maybe this is how we've been our whole lives, and that's why it's so easy for us, because, you know, we're used to eating this way or whatever. And so I kind of want to just talk a little bit about, you know, what Thanksgiving was as we were growing up and what it meant to us and what we ate.
It was a feast.
Yes.
It was a time to overeat. A time to...
Randy's over there besting to say something, so...
Well, because my Thanksgiving, like every other holiday, started out at McDonald's. I was thankful that they were open so I could get a sausage, egg, and
muffin. They were open on Thanksgiving?
Most of the time they were, and if they weren't, I was calling and complaining. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I mean, you're right. It was overindulgence.
Shoot, yeah.
What was typical, Randy, what was typical for a Thanksgiving for you?
Oh, eating until submission.
Well, what
That's
did you
correct.
What did you
we
eat?
Had turkey and dressing and stuffing, and we would have cranberry sauce. We would have two or three different pies, and we'd watch football.
My big deal was smoking a turkey.
Oh, there
so
you go.
I would smoke it all night long the night before, put it on the smoker, and get the biggest bird I could get, because I had to have the leftovers. So it wasn't just about overeating on Thanksgiving. It was just, it was overeating the whole weekend.
Well, if you smoked a turkey, how'd you get the juice for the gravy?
Usually the neck and stuff would come inside the bird, and that's what we used.
So what else did you have?
Well, same thing everybody has.
Yeah.
Dressing. And either a chocolate pecan pie or
key lime pie,
strawberry
pecan pie,
banana strawberry pie. That was my mother's kind of tradition. Of course, that was made with lots of Cool Whip.
Yes.
Popping fresh crescent rolls at the Titanium
household. Oh, yeah,
household.
There you go.
Shoot, yeah. Fresh.
Crescent rolls.
Fresh rolls.
Fresh out of the can.
Yeah, we always had to have fresh rolls and lots of butter.
That's exactly right.
Well, so I will give a little more detail about what we had for Thanksgiving. I was trying to get more about how all this food was cooked and prepared and all the ingredients, and talking about, like, my green bean casserole was, you know, canned cream of mushroom soup, cheese, probably some heavy cream mixed in there, and a can of those Durkee's fried onions on top.
Oh, yeah, you had to have that.
Everybody had those.
I mean,
a staple.
Yeah, you couldn't have Thanksgiving without a big old...
It's like ketchup.
You know, and just a few of those canned green beans thrown in there with that.
Got to have some canned green beans.
Yeah.
But then there was the mashed potatoes, which could not have been made without a stick of butter and
cream.
And a cup of heavy cream. Then we, of course, had the dressing, which my dressing had sausage in it. Yes, I always made dressing with a pound of crumbled sausage. And so then you didn't really want to drain all that grease. You wanted some of that grease from the sausage to flavor the stuffing. And then, of course, we'd have a few mushrooms and celery and onions and sage in there. And the stuffing was Pepperidge Farm
Shoot, yeah.
Out of the bag, you know, the stuffing, the pre-made kind of dried stuffing that you added some broth to. And then, of course, we either baked our turkey. We never smoked a turkey. We usually baked it. And that was where, you know, you get all the fat that comes off of the skin into the pan so that you can take that and then put it in your pan and make gravy.
I think that we've skipped one link in this food chain, though.
What's that?
Queso.
Oh, we never had queso.
Oh.
Well,
Velveeta.
Velveeta and Rotel.
Yes.
That wasn't ever a part of ours.
That was always a part of our...
It must be an Oklahoma thing.
Yeah, it must be. So that was a pre-Thanksgiving.
Oh, absolutely. While you're watching the football game. First football game that's on.
Before you pass out watching the Cowboys.
Exactly. It's an Oklahoma thing.
Yes. Then we had sweet potato casserole. And so you had to take sweet potatoes, again,
mixed with brown sugar,
because sweet potatoes aren't sweet enough.
No.
So you got to add the brown sugar, the butter, and the cream to that, whipped it up, and then covered the top with more butter and brown sugar and pecans.
Oh, yeah.
See, what am I... And then pies. Of course, we did have pecan pie and pumpkin pie and apple pie and cherry pie and... whipped cream on top of that, and rolls and butter.
And we survived it.
We did, thankfully. Thankfully, because not a lot of people do.
Well, you're right. I think that's where this is heading.
So based on all of this discussion. Exactly.
Well, you know, here's what we do. In the summer, we lose 2 pounds. And during this time of year, the average American gains 4 pounds.
Right.
So they add 2 pounds a year. That's 20 pounds a decade. But you don't think of it like that because it's very gradual.
Right.
And then by the time you get into your 50s, you're 30 pounds overweight or 40. And nobody thinks you're overweight because we all look alike.
That's exactly right.
Well, some of them...
I was obese, 226 pounds at 5'10", that's obese. Nobody ever told me I was overweight. And my mother would always, if I lost weight, she would worry that I was sick.
Getting too skinny.
That's right.
Well, some of the information I pulled says that the average American consumes more than 4,500 calories and 229 grams of fat during a typical holiday gathering.
Wow.
And that 3,000 is usually from the meal, but 1,500 come from the pre-Thanksgiving.
The queso.
That's right.
And all of the things that we graze on up until the actual dinner is served.
We forgot one more thing that I think deserves its due.
What's that?
The bacon-wrapped green beans.
See, I never had those either.
Well, we would always have to have bacon in our green bean casserole.
Oh, I never had bacon. We had cheese, but we never had bacon.
Little bacon-wrapped green bean little bundles, and then it had like butter and stuff on top of it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, we were kind of upper echelon with
you
that.
You were.
That's what that was.
Well, what I want to talk about, the other thing that's interesting, a couple things. I think we actually talked about this around Thanksgiving a year or so ago, but I was watching the news and they were saying and talking about the amount of calories people consume during Thanksgiving was that if you served the food on the table, they did a study with two families. One family served the food buffet style, so it was like set up in the kitchen or somewhere, and everybody grabbed a plate and filled their plate.
Right.
Then the other was all around a big dinner table, and all the food was on the table. And they found that the people that ate from the food on the table consumed, I don't remember what the percent or how many more calories, but quite a few more calories than the people that had the buffet dinner.
Well, you had to get up and walk.
Because you actually had to get up and go get the food. And so when it was right there, it was easy to grab an extra spoonful of this or pass that and do this. And so they consumed more food that way. So there's one little trick that you might consider is moving the food away from the table this year. But the other thing that is kind of disturbing is that they say that the heart attacks that show up in the ERs after holiday meals like Thanksgiving or Christmas or New Year's has risen, and there's a big spike in these. What they're finding in the ERs is there's a big spike in people presenting with heart attacks at these times. And I kind of wanted to talk about that and why maybe that was, you know, why is that happening after these meals? And a lot of that comes from the fat, just like we described in all these foods that are typical of the foods that we all grew up on, that we all think of as you have to have these foods to have, you know, your Thanksgiving meal. And we're not trying to be cynical or judgmental about that. I mean, this was typical that we all ate this kind of food.
Sure.
I mean, up until the time we changed our diet 7 years ago, we ate those foods that we discussed every single year without fail. And so I just want to talk a little bit about why that's so bad for you. Why is it so bad to eat the cream cheese and the cream and the eggs and the bacon and all of that stuff that we're consuming in that 4,500 calories we're getting that day? And what is that doing to us? And why does that cause a spike in these heart attacks?
Well, it leads to endothelial dysfunction. You know, why is it worse around the holidays? Because we eat a lot more calories.
Right.
But, I mean, standard American diet leads to endothelial dysfunction just due to the added fat in the diet and the fact that it is high fat. So, you know, a standard American diet is 40% of the calories come from fat. And that fat, particularly if it's added fat, leads to significant arterial problems, and the plaque that builds up in the artery starts very gradually. It starts in childhood, and it's not until it gets to a point where it can cause a problem that it's discovered. And you know, that's unfortunately becoming younger and younger in the United States.
Well, this study that this article that I was reading in particular said that they kind of found this whole incident back in the 50s about how when you consume, which they had people just drink some fat.
Ugh.
And but how their blood reacted, and immediately afterward their bloody was described as milky, so it was thick.
Oh yes.
And so what's happening is we eat this high fat food,
right,
on these holidays. I know that we, you know, standard American diet is that way all the time, but you're getting an even excess more of it on these days. And that increasing milkiness of their blood causes them to have angina.
It can cause angina. It causes sludging. So it doesn't flow through vessels. So if you have some blockages, say you have a 40% blockage of an artery in your heart, and you don't even know it, well, you know, making your blood that sludgy can bring on symptoms. It can cause angina. It can cause, actually, a heart attack.
Well, I can only imagine if you have an artery with any kind of blockage in it at all, and then you throw in that high dose of fat all day long. I mean, think, you know, you've been eating that. It's not just a breakfast. It's all day deal on a holiday, right? So you think about consuming all that fat all day long, and then your blood has got to be so thick with fat. How would it, even if your arteries aren't blocked, how does it even get through?
Well, it causes your blood pressure to go up.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
Well, it does. The viscosity of the blood causes higher blood pressure. And so the lower number is, the higher your risk of having a heart attack. The higher number is, what's called systolic, increases your risk of stroke.
Well, and one of the things, this especially what I read, was the incident of heart attacks goes up even more if there's snow around the holidays, because then you go out and eat this food, and then you go out and snovel
snow.
shovel snow afterward, and then they have a heart attack.
Well, part of that, it has to do with blood pressure. So when you're exercising your legs, your blood pressure drops, the diastolic drops. When you just exercise your arms, as in shoveling snow, your blood pressure goes up, the diastolic. For every 8 points that your diastolic goes up, it doubles your risk of dying.
Scary.
Yeah. And it happens frequently around holidays, you right. know, I mean, around Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's, because it's colder months. Just the cold itself can be problematic if you have unknown heart disease.
Well, and keep in mind, we're specifically kind of honing in on heart disease, but with what we're talking about, all the fat and the destruction of the endothelium affects more than just your heart. I mean, I would think somebody that's diabetic consuming this high-fat food, maybe there's no, you know, quote, sugar, but they're consuming this high-fat diet.
There's sugar added in a lot of that stuff we eat around Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Right.
But still, I mean, that's got to wreak havoc on your...
It does.
On your insulin and the function of your sugar levels.
Well, sugar in and of itself causes endothelial dysfunction as well. So does salt. So we're adding all this sugar and salt to this holiday food. And so it's not just the fat. It's the sugar and the salt that we consume that then drives up our risk of having, an emergency problem.
Right.
Whether it's a stroke or heart attack or whatever, it has to do with the amount that we consume on these days, these holidays. And it's not just Thanksgiving Day either, because it's all weekend.
Yeah. Well, that's why you gain 4 pounds during this season.
So I was just sitting here looking up now. So when we have high-fat diets and high-fat foods, it increases our risk for what a lot of people go to the doctor and are termed pre-diabetes. Now, is that the same as metabolic syndrome?
No. Metabolic syndrome is it's defined as... it's metabolic dysfunction. So it's diabetes, it's hypertension.
High triglyceride levels.
Right.
Okay. And it says high fasting blood sugar as well. So
so it may not be quite the diabetic range.
Right.
But your fasting blood sugar is higher than it should be.
And it says here your risk for heart disease, diabetes, and strokes increases with the number of metabolic risk factors you have. So I would think that decreasing your fat intake from unhealthy foods would be really, really important.
It is really important, especially for pre-diabetics and diabetics, because they have a higher risk of heart disease anyway.
Sure.
And if it's adult onset diabetes, that is 100% reversible. And people think they've got to avoid sugar. But right. Sugar's not the cause. The cause is high fat in your cells due to eating too much fat. For every 100 grams of fat we consume, we store 97. We're fat storage machines. So if you're eating a high fat diet, the fat gets inside your muscle cells. It does not allow the insulin to work.
Right.
And you know, people, a lot of diabetics, especially if they go to a dietitian and they're told to avoid these sugary foods and fruit.
Right.
But they're not told anything about reducing the amount of fat that they take in.
Well, and what I see people do a lot of times is people tell me all the time they don't eat, quote, sugar.
Right.
But they eat the artificially sweetened stuff right. all the time.
Right.
And to them, that's not sugar.
Yeah, like Diet Coke.
Like Diet Coke, mm-hmm. like, you know, just any of the stuff with aspartame. Sure. And then, you know, recently I saw something come across, I don't know if it was Facebook or where I was on the internet, but they said that basically, they've not really determined that aspartame is harmful at all.
It was absurd.
In the newspaper. It was in the newspaper. Somebody said that they consumed Diet Coke versus regular Coke. You know, it was one of those medical questions to the doctors in the paper. And should they be worried about that? And should, is there a reason why they should stop consuming those sugary, those
artificial sweeteners
with aspartame? And basically their response was, not really. And that there that aspartame had not really been proven to cause any harm.
Even though it took, I believe, 8 attempts to get approved by the FDA.
Well, the only reason it was approved was due to Donald Rumsfeld, who is CEO of the corporation, had insider power.
Right.
And it's a neurotoxin. It changes your gut bacteria, which then increases your risk of type 2 diabetes. So artificial sweeteners actually have been shown to significantly increase your risk of being obese. And it does it because we have a neurologically wired function. When sweet hits our tongue, our brain tells our pancreas to put out insulin. So if you eat a non-caloric artificial sweetener, what happens is you become hypoglycemic and you overeat because of that. And I think artificial sweetened beverages are at least as bad for you as the
sugar.
And they probably are worse. And I don't advocate anybody drinking regular soda.
Right.
I can't tell you the last time I personally have had a soft drink. It's just something I avoid like the plague. And I've never liked the taste of artificial sweeteners, so I didn't have that problem to contend
with. Well, we get asked a lot about stevia because stevia is a natural plant.
It is a plant.
That is non-caloric sweetener, but
it's highly processed.
It is highly processed, but it acts the same way as far as keeping your taste buds hypersensitive to sweet and always wanting to have, you know, and like what you described is the same reaction in your pancreas.
Yes.
The same. So, I mean, to me, you just need to avoid those things.
Well, besides changing your taste buds, you know, when you do a lot of sweet food, it keeps you craving that.
Right.
And then that also causes trouble. I mean, we really do deal with food addiction. And I even heard an addictionologist say that food addiction wasn't a true addiction. And I wanted to throttle him. Because obviously, he doesn't, while he knows about addiction, I don't think he understands what drives people a lot of times to overeat. Is a food addiction, and it is a true addiction.
The reason why I am 100% certain of food addictions is because even though it's been 5 years since I've had a bite of meat, or 4.5, something like that, that I've had a bite of meat, I was in somewhere yesterday, and there was a barbecue restaurant, and I smelled that, and I thought, man, I would love to have that.
Right.
And if we weren't addicted to that, I would just be thinking, oh, you know, it's no big deal. But it just, and if you think about whatever it is, I always say on your lowest point in life, when you're depressed, when your things aren't going well at work or in a relationship, you're craving these emotional foods, and they are all heavily laden in salt, sugar, and fat, whether it's McDonald's French fries. Salt, sugar, and fat.
Well, it's no different than in the situations you described, someone that was a smoker craving a cigarette, someone that is an alcoholic craving a drink, or someone that's addicted to food going out and, you know, eating a big old bacon cheeseburger and fries because it makes them feel better.
And I always thought, I truly did. I mean, and I owe a lot of apologies to people that go to AA meetings. I kind of thought, well, after about 10 years, isn't it? I mean, do you really still need to go? I mean, is it? And now I'm like, you know, it's not like I had a huge health problem, but when I see a commercial on TV for something, I mean, it certainly excites a part of my brain that says, I remember eating
that. Yeah, I remember eating that.
Well, and
I can drive by a Sonic, and I drive by them every day.
Yes. Sure.
And in my brain is the taste of a foot-long cheese coney. That's what was my comfort food in high school, because Sonic was the only place open late in the town I grew up in. And so, you know, 10 o'clock, I'd want my foot-long chili cheese coney on the weekend, and that was my comfort food. And I can still recall the taste of that. Now, if that's not food, part of an addiction.
Yes.
And what I didn't know back when I was a kid, and even as a teenager, when I got really hungry,
yes,
I got violently ill. Yes. I'd start throwing up. I'd have a headache. I'd sweat.
Yes.
And those aren't signs of hunger.
No.
That's a withdrawal. I was withdrawing from my drug of choice, which was fat, primarily.
Yes.
Now, when I get hungry, I just get hungry. I don't feel bad. I don't get emotional. But I still have a fear of getting hungry, because I remember the way it used to be.
I have the same thing.
And my sister's just like that as well.
Well, I wanted to give an example of when we talk about all this food and the high fat and how we can eat 4,500 calories in a day. Just an example. So 1 ounce of cream cheese has basically 100 calories.
Wow.
And 10 grams of fat.
Yeah.
1 ounce. When have you ever done anything with 1 ounce of cream cheese?
No.
I mean, when I was cooking, like, cheesecake was one of the things that we had for dessert. And it took at least 2 bricks of cream cheese, and those are 8 ounces a piece.
Yes.
So that's 16 ounces of cream cheese. Then you had to stuff celery. So before we had dinner, we had celery stuffed with probably cream cheese.
Or pimento cheese.
Or pimento cheese. And then there's cream. So heavy cream, which I described as putting in probably your mashed potatoes, your sweet potato casserole. You're whipping it up for, you know, topping on pies or whatever. 2 tablespoons.
Of heavy cream?
Heavy cream. How many calories do you think are in? 2 tablespoons.
I don't know. I'm afraid to guess.
I mean, you'd put that in your coffee, right?
Sure. Oh, heck yeah. Sure, sure.
Yeah.
104 calories and 11 grams of fat. In 2 tablespoons. So you're talking, in my sweet potato casserole, I had at least a cup of cream.
I'd make scalloped potatoes with 2 cups of cream.
So you can see how easily it would be to get 4,500 calories. And we are talking about Thanksgiving food, which is just around the corner. You know, and I know there's such a emotional attachment to Thanksgiving dinner, but I really feel like if you focus on what Thanksgiving really should be about, and to me,
yes,
that's fellowship and being family with the people you love, your family, friends, whatever that might be, that food is secondary. Yes, you are gathering and to share a meal, but it doesn't have to be what it always has been. I mean, I don't feel like we are missing out on anything on our Thanksgiving meal because we don't have all the things that we described earlier. No need to rehash all of that. But we still have a wonderful Thanksgiving meal and fellowship with family. And
I do recall 7 years ago, though, because we started this in October.
We did.
So
we were hit with the holidays
right
away.
2 months later, mm-hmm. we are hit with a holiday meal. And
it was hard.
You're eating a salad.
It was hard because, one, I didn't know how to cook. I didn't know what I was doing. And you want all those things that you've had every year because you think that's the tradition. And you think that's what you have to make this Thanksgiving. And certainly we've come a long way in these 7 years of doing this. And
yeah, I think I smoked a tofurkey first Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Yes,
and we've definitely come a long way. So I just want to, you know, anything you can do to make your Thanksgiving dinner a little healthier is worth it by all means. So some of the things like your Thanksgiving appetizers, say, you know, I mean, things just like vegetables. How about right. some carrot yeah. sticks and celery sticks and hummus and even some mixed nuts or olives and, you know, anything that is not just saturated in,
sure.
in fat, sugar, salt.
And that's not processed.
I mean, that's not processed. We're talking some whole foods here, and you can really have some good good appetizers and things like that with these, with, you know, vegetables and hummus. And again, it's all about
guacamole.
You could have guacamole yeah, and sure. some corn tortillas.
Now, isn't that really fattening?
This is definite. It is fattening, and so are the mixed nuts, but they are whole food fats. They are not processed, and they have lots of fiber and other nutrients, and those are the things that I want to see people going for.
Well, but you make the point in your presentation when we do our seminars about the fact that you used to never give it a consideration to add a half cup of oil to
a recipe or salad.
But you avoided avocados because sure. they were fattening foods. And
yeah.
what, a half cup of avocado is 120 calories?
And a half a cup of oil is 950. It's unbelievable. And I really think that came, again, from almost like media bias and things, you know, things I saw in commercials and read in magazines right. about, oh, avoiding avocados because they were so fat. Now avocados have made a new name for themselves. They're sure. the healthy fats now. So they are sure. back. They're back in, you know,
in
today.
Vogue.
But they yeah. weren't years ago. I mean, they were things that you didn't
but
eat.
But you still have of. Never heard that a half cup of oil is bad for you.
No. Unless not if you, it's extra virgin olive oil.
Exactly. That's right. So some of the things, I want to give a couple of little tips and things. The foods that are super, super nutritious. They pack a lot of bang for their buck in the nutrient category and ways you can make them. And the first thing is mushrooms. So, I mean, I probably will go through 2 or 3 pounds of mushrooms to make our Thanksgiving dinner because I put them in everything that we eat. And you want to talk a little bit about why mushrooms are so healthy?
Well, there are a lot of reasons. Certain mushrooms have a chemical in them that blocks the conversion from testosterone to estrogen. So they are healthy from that standpoint. They're also healthy from the standpoint that some mushrooms will actually be able to reverse heart disease in and of themselves. And then they are anti-cancer agents. They're anti-heart disease agents. So there are a lot of different compounds in mushrooms that are healthy. And can you prepare a mushroom in an unhealthy manner? Yeah, the way we used to do.
Yeah, if you
put them in a heavy cream.
If you're heavy cream and you're green bean casserole.
Battered and fried.
So here's one of the things I'm going to throw out there. So when we would cook our turkey and try to get the broth or the juice off the turkey to make gravy, in my opinion, there was never, ever enough broth for the gravy, because you use lots of gravy, right? You
right.
want it on your mashed potatoes and your stuffing and your turkey, and
right.
you never got enough. So what I propose and what we've done now for years is made a mushroom gravy, and it's super tasty. You can make all of it you want very easily, and it's just a matter of sauteing a bunch of chopped up mushrooms, any kind you might like, whether that's just the plain old white button mushroom, portobellos, anything, with chopped onion and garlic. Don't add any oil to your pan. Just put those in your pan.
How do you saute without oil?
Just put them in your pan. Put them on about a medium heat. Put the lid on, and all those mushrooms have lots of water content, and you'll find you have a nice soft mushrooms and soft onions by the time you get done, with probably quite a bit of water that you'll have to cook off. Then I add just a couple cartons of vegetable broth, a little garlic powder, onion powder. And if you let that cook down for a while, you'll actually get a really, really savory gravy. I like to add a little bit of sage maybe or a little thyme to that as well. But it's a very savory gravy, and you can have all the gravy you want without all the saturated fat from the juice of the turkey. So that's one way we can cut down on some fat and get some nutrients in with those lovely mushrooms. The next one is cranberries. So cranberries are like superfood here, and we're not talking about the Ocean Spray whole cranberry sauce or jellied cranberry in the can. That is nothing but high fructose corn syrup and all kinds of chemicals and preservatives. And I mean, there's, I don't, three different kinds of sugar, I think. Yes, exactly. You know, right. you emptied out the can and you sliced it.
Sure.
So we're talking about fresh cranberries, and they are
cranberries
so
are
health promoting.
The most health promoting berry there is.
They're amazing.
But, you know, to eat a cranberry, it's pretty tart.
So what I like to do with cranberries, and this is a good way to get your cranberry salad, and I've done a cooking class and a seminar so far this holiday season where I've served the mushroom gravy that I just talked about, and I served this cranberry salad. And most of the time when you do mention cranberry salad, you know, it was the, people ate that canned cranberry salad, but it was kind of the obligatory bite of cranberry because yeah. It really wasn't very good. And so when I say I'm serving cranberry salad, everybody kind of gets this look on their face like, oh no, really? So what I do is I take, right now in the stores, they have bags of fresh cranberries, and it's about a 10, 12 ounce bag. And I put that bag of fresh cranberries in a food processor with one whole orange. That's peel and all, whole orange. Just get out the seeds. A Granny Smith apple. Now, you do core the apple. You don't want the seeds in the core of the apple, but the skin and the rest of the Granny Smith apple. About a half a cup of walnuts, and then about a cup of dates. And those dates are what's going to kind of tone the cranberries. Between the orange and the dates, the cranberries are very tart.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you, by the time you put the dates and the orange in there and you blend it all together, you get this coarsely chopped salad, and it is fantastic.
Unbelievable.
And I mean, they scarfed it up at both my classes where I serve this. I mean,
ran out.
We actually ran out, and I've made it at home, you know, even since then just to have. It is very sweet with all the dates, and so it was not only good with dinner, but I ate some for breakfast because it was so good and had all that fruit
in
it. Well,
it's so good for you. The dates, the oranges, the walnuts, and the cranberries, they're all superfoods. That should be really called superfood salad.
And it's just so easy to do. I mean, there's no prep, no cooking. Just kind of wash your fruit off, throw it all in the food processor. And that salad that I just described to you makes plenty of salad, probably, I don't know, maybe 5 cups worth or so. So it's definitely a keeper, and I highly recommend that.
Okay, so I got a question.
Sure.
So if you don't have a food processor, would it work in like a Vitamix, do you think?
You'd have to pulsate it
slowly. And
slowly. The idea is you don't want to run it on full speed,
right.
Because even in a food processor, you'd get paste, and you don't want that consistency. You just want it very roughly chopped. And normally I would say even, I call it a slap chopper on the,
yes.
You know, the cutting board, one of those that's a round chopper, and you just hit the top and it chops. Everything would chop up really nicely with that, except the orange.
What about the Salad Master?
Salad Master might work for that as well. Because Randy's coming up with ideas of how he's going to fix this salad himself.
Right, because I don't have a food processor. And the reason I don't have a food processor is there's too many attachments.
Yeah, it does have.
Yeah, that's just too much. Okay, so if you have a food processor, though, do you have to slice the orange up before you put it in the food
processor?
Well,
I just kind of quarter the orange up because I want to at least open it up to get all the seeds out.
Okay.
Because I haven't found any oranges that don't have any seeds in. And I particularly like Valencia oranges. They're just really juicy.
Okay.
And so they'll have some big, you know, a couple big seeds, and you just want to get those out of there.
So I'm going to make this tonight in my Vitamix, and I'm going to report back.
Okay, you report back.
Yeah.
Even if it ends up being like a smoothie, it's really good.
Well, it might be more coarse.
Yes.
But that'll be fine,
well,
too.
Well, I make, yeah, for my smoothie in the mornings, a lot of times I'll make what I call a roughie.
Yeah.
And I do that in a Vitamix.
Yes, I think it'll be fine.
Yeah.
So
I think I'm going to be the hit of the party.
So the next thing we want to talk about real quickly is sweet potatoes. So we all mentioned how we had sweet potato casserole and all the things we put in that casserole. What I'm shocked about when I think about how I used to make that is, and I eat sweet potatoes now all the time and I love them, but they are so sweet as they are, especially if you buy whole sweet potatoes and you bake them, they're just super sweet. And why I felt like I had to add a cup of brown sugar to some mashed sweet potatoes is beyond me.
Because that's just what we did.
You know, there was just no thought to it.
Right.
So what I'm recommending is you take your sweet potatoes, 3 or 4 baked potato or sweet potatoes found in the produce department, and bake them until they're done. Let them cool, and then they peel real easily from there. Then put those sweet potatoes in your mixer with a little bit of not cream. Of course, I'm going to recommend some non-dairy milk, some kind of almond milk or soy milk. And just whip those up, and they whip up very nicely with just that. And I throw in some cinnamon, and then I place those into a casserole dish, and I cover them with chopped walnuts, and then put them back in the oven to bake until dinner to keep warm, and to toast those walnuts on top. And they're super, super delicious, and no need for all that added sugar or fat at all. I mean, they're super delicious. And
sweet
talk
potatoes
a little
are,
bit about why the sweet potatoes themselves are, we eat them all the time. And
sweet
just,
potatoes are a superfood. I mean, they're some of the most potent anti-cancer fighting compounds in sweet potatoes that we've seen and we've found.
This article says sweet potatoes can be considered a superfood. They're one of the healthiest vegetables on the planet, and NASA has chosen them to take them on space missions. They're so healthy.
Well, they're probably the biggest bang for the buck as well. There are some people that basically have survived solely on sweet potatoes. So in Papua New Guinea,
sure,
they eat tons of sweet potatoes, traditional, tons of sweet potatoes. They smoke like fiends, but nobody gets lung cancer. And it probably has to do with the fact that they eat 17 different types of sweet potatoes.
I thought for a minute you were going to say they have smoked sweet potatoes. And I thought, now that sounds pretty good.
Well, it is. I've smoked a sweet potato.
I'm thinking I'll just dip
We've
it.
We've put them out on our smoke. Grill. And because they're so sweet, that they natural sugars in the sweet potatoes get caramelized and crispy with the fire of the grill, and they're fantastic.
Yeah.
So you could even, you know, I just cut them in wedges to cook them out on the grill,
right,
that way, and they come out great. So just don't adulterate your sweet potatoes. They, you know, I find that so many foods like this, potatoes, sweet potatoes, get a bad rap as being an unhealthy food, but it's because of how we are traditionally used to fixing them.
Right.
Like potatoes are some of the healthiest foods you can eat, regular potatoes. And we will have mashed potatoes with our meal, but I don't put heavy cream and butter.
Butter and sour cream and cheese,
yes,
and bacon.
Yes. And they are just as good.
Yes.
You know, so some of those potatoes mashed with just a touch of some non-dairy milk and salt and pepper, and then with my mushroom gravy, and they're just as good.
And so some people don't really like the taste of sweet potatoes. I don't have a huge liking for really sweet food anymore. But one way that I get my sweet potatoes is she will actually blend regular potatoes with the sweet potatoes sometimes when she makes mashed potatoes.
Uh-huh.
That's a way I can get sweet potato without it being too sweet.
Yeah, if I put, like, say, 4 or 5 boiled potatoes, you know, mash them with 1 sweet potato, it's a way to add some of that nutrient of the sweet,
right,
potato and get the creaminess into the potatoes, but without making it so sweet that he doesn't care for it.
But
I don't mind it at all. I could eat sweet potatoes all day long.
Because I know how healthy sweet potatoes are, I will eat them in spite of the fact that I don't really,
right,
like the sweet.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, one of the things, you have to wrap your mind around when you do change your way of eating is that you develop a philosophy of eating to live, not right. living to eat.
Right.
And so I still have trouble with that.
When you eat to live and you eat something like a sweet potato that maybe you didn't like before, the more you eat it, the more you enjoy it right. and the more you like it. And there, I can't tell you how many foods I started out that way and now kale. I crave them. And kale being one of them. We knew it was so healthy in so many different ways and we needed more and more of that. But, you know, we just kept plugging away at different ways to eat it mm-hmm. and prepare it. And now we absolutely love it. And it's just a staple in our diet every day. But it wasn't that way in the beginning. And you do have to retrain your mind, your taste buds, everything, and how to think about some of these foods.
You know, you're exactly right about that, because my daughter every now and then will want to get a little pint and she'll eat the coconut milk ice cream. Mm-hmm. And so she'll get a spoon and we'll sit down and I'll take one or two spoonfuls and think, man, this is so sweet.
Yes, you know, yes.
It just, and I mean, I used to be able to eat the whole thing before, and now I take two or three spoonfuls.
And that's
I think,
plenty.
That's plenty.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, before we leave here today, I want to make sure everyone knows, again, who we are, Plant-Based OKC.
And we're not part of
No, we are Plant-Based OKC. The that's three
exactly
of us here.
Right. That's exactly right.
So we do have a website, plantbasedokc.com. On that website, you'll find a listing of the events that we hold. We do hold a free monthly seminar at a hospital at Southwest 89th and May Community Hospital. Seminars are free of charge. Those are being held now on Saturdays at noon once a month. We're actually going to take off the November and December, and we'll start back. Our next one is scheduled for January 21st. If you get on our website, there'll be a link to email a reservation. I do serve a plant-based lunch, and the room does have some limited seating, so a reservation is required. But we go over the science behind why eating the way we talk about eating is the healthiest way to eat, and then I talk a little bit about cooking and grocery shopping and label reading. So if you're interested, please reach out to us there. Then we do have a monthly event in the city at Rococo at North Park Mall. And that event is actually the first Monday of every month. So we will be back there on Monday, December 5th. Those are at 6 o'clock p.m. Rococo has a special room in the back for us. They provide a plant-based menu. You can eat or not eat. It really, you're not forced to buy anything. Sure. It doesn't cost to actually come and just join us for conversation. This is not a formal presentation. It really is just about fellowship and meeting others who are interested in eating healthier. We're there to answer questions. It's just a fun evening, and so we'd love for you to join us there. And we have a Facebook page, Plant-Based OKC on Facebook, and we'd love for you to join us. I've posted all of the recipes I've talked about today on our Facebook page, so you can see those on there as well. So the first Monday, as I said, in December is December 5th. We'll be at Rococo, and then the next one's January 2nd. And just every first Monday we will be there.
Boy, we'll need to be there in January.
We will, and we'll talk. You know, everybody gets on in January this kick about getting healthy because they've just put on those 4 pounds over the holidays, and they want to get serious about getting healthy in the new year. So we're usually pretty full come January,
that's
February.
Right.
So by the end of the year, we're not so busy anymore. So because everybody's in the holiday mode. But please like our Facebook page so you can get our updates on when things are happening.
Tell them about our t-shirts.
Oh, well, let Randy tell them. Randy's got
yeah, Randy designed it.
Yes.
That's exactly right. If you want to join the plant-based movement or the plant-based OKC movement, you can go on our Facebook page, and we have our Peas, Love, and Kale t-shirts and our plant-based OKC t-shirts for sale, so you can kind of support the cause. And then the only other thing that we want to tell you is be on the lookout at your local movie theater for the documentary that we are all in called Eating You Alive, And that will be coming out, we think, right after the first of the year. And so Dr. Conway is in it, and Andrea is in it, and Dr. Jeff Garrett from here in Oklahoma City is in it, and I have a little plug in it as well. So we would love for you all to check that out as well.
And the more we know as we go along, and when we're here talking, we will certainly update everyone, but we will have information on our website and on our Facebook page as we know more.
That's right. So happy Thanksgiving,
yes,
everybody.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving. May it be a healthy one and full of love and fellowship with your friends and family.
Full of love, peas, and kale.
That's right. Exactly right.
So we will be back here next month. Enjoy your holidays, and a shout to Kathy. Live life with purpose and on purpose.
Amen.